asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Catherine Drew. French police have detained two men in Grenoble after a car was deliberately driven at off-duty troops early Thursday morning. The apparent attack comes less than a week after four people were killed by radical Islamist Redouane Ladkin near Carcassonne in southwest France. FSN's Elena Cassis reports from Paris.
A car was driven directly at a group of soldiers out jogging in civilian clothes early on Thursday morning, with the driver apparently shouting insults at them in Arabic. He drove away in the Peugeot 208, which apparently had fake number plates. Police now say they've detained the driver in Grenoble Market after a search operation and have also arrested the owner of the car. They say they're not treating it as a terrorist attack attempt. This incident comes on the day the four victims of Friday's hostage-taking near Carcassonne were buried.
The daughter of the Russian spy Sergei Skripal, who was poisoned alongside her father by a nerve agent in Salisbury, is no longer in critical condition. 33-year-old Yulia Skripal is improving rapidly, according to Salisbury NHS Trust. It comes after British police revealed the Skripal's home is now subject to intense inquiry after the highest concentration of nerve agent was discovered on Sergei Skripal's front door. US President Donald Trump has announced on Twitter that he is replacing the Secretary of Veteran Affairs. According to the president, David Shulkin will be replaced by Trump's personal doctor, Admiral Ronnie Jackson. FSN's Kevin McAleese reports from Washington.
Shulkin, who also served under the Obama administration, is the latest in a string of high-profile departures from the Trump cabinet, following Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster. In an op-ed for the New York Times, the ousted Shulkin criticised a toxic, chaotic and subversive atmosphere at the agency, the federal government's second largest. Shulkin's come under strong criticism in the past over his travel practices during a trip to Europe and was accused of inappropriately accepting tickets for the tennis at Wimbledon. The man nominated to replace him, Ronnie Jackson, the current White House physician, will require Senate confirmation before he can take over as the new VA chief.
Former Australian cricket captain Steve Smith has broken down in tears and apologised for his part in the ball tampering scandal at a news conference in Sydney. Cricket Australia has banned Smith and batsmen David Warner and Cameron Bancroft following the incident in the third test against South Africa. The 28-year-old cried as he admitted a failure of leadership. Coach Darren Lehman, who was cleared of any involvement in the incident, said he would stand down after the current test series with South Africa. The Ethiopia People's Democratic Front has elected a new chairperson, who is expected to be the country's next prime minister from the 2nd of April. Dr. Abiy Ahmed is a member of parliament who is viewed by many as a reformist. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you, Catherine Drew. There's a bit of breaking news there. While Catherine was on air, Russia has announced that it has expelled 60 US diplomats and has closed the country's St. Petersburg consulate in what has been described as a tit-for-tat response to US action over the spy poisoning case in the UK. So it's kicked out 60 US diplomats. Has Russia. That's the very latest on that. A warm welcome to Thursday's Richie Allen Show. How are you? Hope you're well. You can tweet me now, between now and the end of the programme. It's at Richie Allen Show. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts. Dr. Michael Sala joins the programme to talk about his brand new book. A lot of excitement about that. Should be a good one. Let's do it.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv. It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, indeed. Michael's new book is called Antarctica's Hidden History, Corporate Foundations of Secret Space Programs. The exopolitics expert, Dr. Michael Sala, joins the program in around about 25 to 30 minutes' time. We'll have an extended conversation. He was on the program back in November, and he was in the middle of writing or coming close to completing this book, and I asked him to come back when it was published. It's out now and available. We'll talk with Michael about that a bit later on. We're live on richieallen.co.uk. Of course, check out a couple of brand new articles at richieallen.co.uk. Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, triggerwarning.tv, and TuneIn Radio as well. Plenty of places to hear your Richie Allen show. It's the 28th of, is it? No, it's the 29th. It's the 29th of March, 2018. Tomorrow's Good Friday, of course, bank holiday tomorrow. Let's get rid of the music and let's crack on with the old programme. Yeah, a couple of articles on richieallen.co.uk. One of them is about a fairly draconian story about a school that has decided to take toilet roll out of the toilets. It's a West Midlands school, a school in Dudley, has decided to take toilet paper out of the toilets because some students have taken to blocking up the toilets. It's resulted in the embarrassing situation where primary school children have to ask for toilet roll in a class. A teacher will count off some sheets and the child will presumably then go to the bathroom. It's madness, really. Interesting piece on that on richieallen.co.uk and one or two other examples of what is going on in schools. And I wrote a piece very quickly today. I have since amended it. It wasn't my best work. A piece about John Mann. Interesting stuff about John Mann. I rushed it out quick. There were some grammatical problems with it, one or two spelling mistakes as well, but I have corrected it. That's the beauty of the edit facility. It is interesting. It's about John Mann and this kind of McCarthyism thing about anti-Semitism, which we are going to talk about again in a minute, but I promise you I won't bore you and I won't be repeating stuff that you've heard in the last couple of days, because this is evolving, this story about anti-Semitism in the Labour Party and anti-Semitism in general in the UK. But the big story that you heard at the top of the hour there with Catherine Drew is that Yulia Skripal is awake, is conscious, is talking, and is improving rapidly. She's the daughter of Sergei Skripal. It has been alleged that her and her father, the ex-double agent, were poisoned nearly 4 weeks ago in Salisbury after being exposed to a nerve agent. That's what was alleged anyway. Right? Well, she's awake and responding well to treatment. Now, Sky News reporter, in fact, their crime correspondent is a man called Martin Brunt, and he's been talking about it. He's, in fact, based outside the Skripal's house in Salisbury. Martin Brunt on the rapidly improving Yulia Skripal.
I think it's an extraordinary development. I mean, for the best part of a month since they were poisoned, we've been led to believe that they were, told indeed, that they were unconscious, critically ill, their very lives in the balance. And this wasn't just media speculation. This is the kind of language we'd heard from the Prime Minister, the Home Secretary, even the judge in the Court of Protection last week, which the judge who was asked to adjudicate on some ongoing medical treatment. So, you know, the clear impression was given that both of them were unlikely to survive. I mean, so much so that when I interviewed Sergei Skripal's best friend a couple of days ago, Ross Cassidy, he too said that everything he had heard and read suggested that their death would be a merciful release. I mean, that's the impression that everybody's got. Now we're told by the hospital that that Yulia is improving. I mean, improving rapidly, according to a statement that was put out a couple of hours ago, and no longer in a critical condition. That was the official statement to the media from the hospital, but the hospital's medical director, Christine Blanchard, went on to say that Yulia had responded well to treatment, although there was a note of caution that she was still receiving expert clinical 24-hour care. So, you know, there isn't the suggestion that she's completely out of the woods, but it is an extraordinary turnaround in her condition.
Well, extraordinary indeed, eh? Very extraordinary. Not least because today the police investigating what happened to the Skripals have come out and said that they strongly believe that Skripal and his daughter first came into contact with the nerve agent that poisoned them at their home. The highest concentration of the agent used against the pair was found on their front door. So this is a remarkable development, this. And I have to say again, and again I say, I have no problem saying this. I don't have any proof of anything. When I say this, it's just speculation. But the idea that a professional team of assassins or a lone assassin would smear some nerve agent on the front door of a house and trust that Sergei Skripal would be exposed to enough of it that it would kill him is frankly monumental bollocks. It has to be bollocks, doesn't it? If you want to get rid of somebody, there are far easier ways of doing it than putting some nerve agent on a door and hoping that he comes into contact with enough of it that it will kill him. I just don't believe it. But I'm honest enough to say I don't know. It's just my take on things. What's very interesting, of course, is, and Martin Brunt alluded to it, he spoke with Ross Cassidy. I brought you that audio yesterday. Cassidy claims to be Skripal's best friend. And Cassidy said the condition was so bad, as far as he knew, of both Yulia and Sergei, that they would be better off if they were allowed to die. This stinks to high heaven, this story, doesn't it? Doesn't it really? We'll leave it alone because we've talked so much about it. Now, Jeremy Corbyn has said today that prejudice and harassment against Jews has no place in Labour. It doesn't have any place anywhere. Who would argue with that? But there has been no evidence put forward that Jews are harassed by anybody in Labour. Not in Labour as in giving birth, in the Labour Party. A leading Jeremy Corbyn ally resigned today for defending a candidate who posted a Holocaust denial article. You know this, it's been all over the news. Christine Shawcroft gave up her position as chair of Labour's disputes panel. She said she was wrong and misguided to have sent an email calling for a Peterborough Council candidate to have his suspension lifted. This is crazy stuff, right? A senior Labour source told Sky News they believe that Shawcroft is unlikely to stand down from Labour's ruling National Executive Committee, as her position will be up for election in June anyway. Sky News presenter Stephen Dixon filling in for Kay Burley. Here's Stephen Dixon.
Jeremy Corbyn says prejudice and harassment against Jewish people have no place in Labour. It comes after party official Christine Shawcroft stood down from the party's National Executive, their Disputes Committee, not from the executive itself, after it emerged she'd given her backing to a party member accused of Holocaust denial. Now, in a letter to Labour members, Mr Corbyn says it's important to develop a deeper understanding of what constitutes antisemitism. He says often it takes familiar forms, but newer forms of antisemitism have also appeared, sometimes woven into criticisms of the actions of Israeli governments. Support for justice for the Palestinian people should provide no one with the excuse to insult, harass or encourage hatred of Jewish people.
The problem is that in some quarters in the Labour Party, you've got people with this world picture that always attributes maliciousness and conspiracy to Jews, even to the extent that they accuse Jews of inventing the Holocaust.
Yeah. That was Jonathan Arkush there. Jonathan Arkush, he's the president of the Board of Deputies of British Jews. Then we had a remarkable turn of events then. You will have heard of Leave.eu. Leave.eu, you would have heard of it. Big pro-Brexit organisation, very prominent in the referendum campaign. They tweeted today, now their Twitter handle is @LeaveEUOfficial. @LeaveEUOfficial. Wait till you hear what they tweeted. This is funny. Is it any wonder that Labour can't be bothered to deal with the disgusting anti-Semitism in the party when they are so reliant on the votes of Britain's exploding Muslim population? It's a question of maths for these people, not justice, said Leave.eu. Ooh-er, right? The gloves are coming off. Fancy a bit of anti-Semitism? No, I prefer a bit of Islamophobia myself. Right? By the way, I'm joking. I don't think they're Islamophobic. They're idiots, but they're not Islamophobic. Well, Naz Shah is the Labour MP, Bradford. Do you remember Naz Shah? You'll remember Naz Shah. Naz was discovered by a blogger called Paul Staines back in April of 2016. It was discovered by Staines that Naz reposted a Facebook meme in 2014 that supported the relocation of Israel to the United States of America. It was funny and harmless. Save them some pocket money, said Naz, meaning save America some pocket money by basically ingesting Israel, right? Relocating Israel. Now, she wrote that at the time in 2014 because, like a lot of people, she was pissed off that the Israelis were carpet bombing Gaza and killing hundreds of children, which is what they were doing, right? It's what the Israelis do. So she wrote that, and she also wrote on Facebook about a newspaper poll concerning alleged Israeli war crimes in the Gaza conflict. She wrote that the Jews are rallying to the poll. And later in 2014, she appeared to compare some Israeli policies with the policies of Adolf Hitler. Adolf, 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 tomato, tomato. Shah asserted at the time that her views on Israel had moderated in the 20 months since the post. However, she had to step down from her unpaid post as John McDonnell's private parliamentary secretary. She was eventually suspended from the Labour Party. Do you remember? She was suspended because she was an anti-Semite. Of course, there was nothing anti-Semitic about anything she said. Saying that America should basically adopt Israel is not anti-Semitic. Might be practical, as she suggested at the time. Comparing the Israeli behaviour to Hitler is not anti-Semitic either. It was factual. Anyway, she was suspended, she came back, and you know what, dear listener, these days Naz is a much better girl. She knows her place. So she was on Sky News this afternoon, and she was asked to comment on the Vote EU, let me say that again, she was asked to comment on the VoteLeave.eu tweet, that tweet that said basically that Labour's not interested in dealing with anti-Semitism because it's currying the Muslim vote. So what did Naz Shah say to that? The reformed anti-Semite.
I'm very unhappy, you're absolutely right, and the reason I'm unhappy is the tone it's taken, and what it's doing is a campaigning organisation which is far past its sell-by date is using a narrative of division and hatred. And in this fight against anti-Semitism, it is the Jewish community that we have had support from. And to say this is about anti-Semitism, the Board of Jewish Deputies have rightfully condemned it this afternoon and said actually it is within the Muslim community that they have huge amounts of support for, and this is not the way to tackle anti-Semitism.
And there will be people, though, I mean, with the greatest of respect to you, there will be people saying, you know, why should we take the view of Naz Shah when it comes to anti-Semitism? You were suspended from the Labour Party because of posting anti-Semitic comments on Facebook.
Absolutely, which is why I can talk about my journey with building relationships with that Jewish community that I offended.
Yes, Naz has been thoroughly rehabilitated. She went away on a journey. She went on a journey of discovery, and she realised that you can never, ever, ever criticise Israel or your political career will be destroyed. Good girl, Naz. Right. Here's a bit more from Naz.
Well, look, it's very refreshing that you're approaching it head on in that way. So with that in mind, can I ask you about Jeremy Corbyn has talked in this letter about anti-Semitism being viewed, looking at it from different perspectives. Now, is there a sense within some areas of the Labour Party, which have traditionally been very supportive of the plight of the Palestinians, for example, that approach has led to some anti-Semitism, very much in the idea of taking sides on that very difficult area of dispute? Is that one way where people have slipped into anti-Semitism, perhaps almost without meaning to?
Well, certainly in my case, that was definitely where I slipped. If we look at when I made my tweets and I hurt the Jewish community, that was during the Gaza conflict of 2014.
Yes, Naz has been reprogrammed completely. Her husband has no idea who she is. It's like the Stepford Wives. Who is this woman? Did you hear what she just said there?
Well, certainly in my case, that was definitely where I slipped. If we look at when I made my tweets and I hurt the Jewish community, that was during the Gaza conflict of 2014.
When I slipped, when I hurt the Jewish community, was over my tweets about the Gaza conflict. Naz's brain has been removed. And a carefully sculpted brain that's very similar to Naz's old brain, but not quite, has been put back in. And the skull has been replaced. And she's been put back into the Labour Party. Gaza conflict, are you shitting me? There was no conflict. There was just mass murder from the sky by Israeli fighter jets. It's the latest and greatest technology. And yet a load of people underneath them, in an open-air prison that can't go anywhere, over land or sea they can't escape, and they were carpet-bombed into oblivion. Gaza conflict, I hurt the Jewish community, and I slipped, says Naz. Jesus Christ, huh? It doesn't get any more Stepford than that. Anyway, I was thinking today, I was going to do a virtue signalling countdown, but I'm not going to do one, because I did one on Tuesday, was it? I think it was Tuesday. But there was a monumental example of virtue signalling today. It was absolutely incredible. It's a guy called Oliver Cam, and he's a writer with the Times of London, Oliver Cam. Do you want to hear this stuff? He's a columnist with the Times. He says to Sky News that anti-Semitism is endemic. Wait for this. Have I got it? I have. He says it's endemic in Jeremy Corbyn's circle. So we don't have a countdown, but this is so good, this. It deserves the music, so it's going to get it. It's going to get it. Listen to this Times columnist talking about Jeremy Corbyn, anti-Semitism, and his love of the Jews.
No, there is little doubt in my mind that anti-Semitism is not a huge problem in modern Britain. The problem is that there's a much greater incidence of this most virulent and ancient of hatreds in politics, and specifically in the Labour Party, and specifically in the circle around Jeremy Corbyn.
So why is that in your view?
In my view, it's because there is a long-standing suspicion of the mere existence of Jewish people in certain parts of the far left. The idea that whereas the socialist utopia unites people, assimilates them, regardless of their ostensible differences with the abolition of capitalism, the Jewish people retain this stubborn attachment to their linguistic, cultural, and national traditions. And I have, as a journalist, no particular interest in the fortunes of Judaism, but I have a passionate interest in the survival, the flourishing, and the thriving of the Jewish people. And Mr. Corbyn, in a party that has deep links historically with Anglo-Jewry, appears neither interested nor concerned in that issue.
The Richie Allen Show relies. Wow! That was amazing. I'm passionate about the flourishing, the thriving and the surviving of the Jewish people. Oliver Cam there of the Times. This is crazy, this. Check out my article about John Mann today and his heading up of this McCarthyism, this witch hunt to find anti-Semites around the country, which is largely based on things like you were in a room with a guy and he was talking to somebody else about how much he hates the Jews and you didn't leave. You stayed there, therefore you're anti-Semitic by association. This is the sort of stuff you see. You're in a Facebook group and there's 77,000 members of it. And one Thursday at 4 o'clock in the morning, some guy said the Holocaust even never happened. And you stayed in a Facebook group. Well, I never saw that post. Liar! You're an anti-Semite. You have to be destroyed. That's how it's going, you see. It's how it's been played out. And Mann, the rabid Zionist John Mann, whom I get into great detail in this article on richieallen.co.uk, which I did tidy up later on, and it's all true about this guy and his connections and what's really going on here. It's not about Corbyn. Corbyn's fans, you see, identity politics, mired in identity politics as they are, think this is left versus right and all that bollocks. It isn't. Corbyn is just one That's to stir up all of this identity politics feelings. This is about everybody. It's about everybody, not about Corbyn. It's about preventing people from saying anything. Self-censorship. I want to say something. Will I say it? No, I could be destroyed. Therefore, I won't say it. That's what's going on. It's not about Corbyn. Corbyn is just another facet of the establishment. He's just another establishment stooge. That's all he is, yellow jezza. It's not about him. Don't worry about Jeremy Corbyn. He'll be fine. Jeremy will end up in the House of Lords. He's a millionaire already. He's not interested in you. Couldn't give a shit about you or yours at all. Don't ever think that he does. He doesn't. This is about you and your ability to stand up and complain against or protest against the fact that hundreds of politicians in this country, nationally and locally, are owned lock, stock and barrel by a foreign country. But they don't want you saying that. They don't want you thinking that. They don't want you whispering that. Hence the witch hunt that's underway at the moment. And as I said today, where is Edward Murrow in the national media to stand up to it on a daily basis and call these people out as liars and as traitors? Because their loyalties are to another state, not to their own state, and certainly not to you. And Corbyn has fallen over, bent over backwards, took his trousers and his underpants down and offered them his back passage. That's what Corbyn has done. We're going to take a break and then we're going to change tack completely because Dr. Michael Salla is standing by and will join me. And this is going to be exciting. This, he's got a brand new book out about Antarctica and the history of that region, UFO research, the Nazis. It's extraordinary. It's really, really interesting. He's got a copy of the book on the way to me, but I was able to read a few chapters of it today online. And I'm looking forward to speaking with Michael Salla. As usual, if there's something you'd like me to put to Michael during the conversation, because we'll have him for about 45, 50 minutes, let me know and I will put it to him. Tweet at Richie Allen Show.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today. Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
And Dr. Michael Salla joins us after this from David Bowie on your Richie Allen Show for Thursday, March 29th, 2018. Thanks for joining me. Hope you're in good form as we head into Easter weekend. Love this. This is Starman from Bowie. Tweet at Richie Allen Show with a question for Michael Salla. Back in two.
Didn't know what time it was, the lights were low, oh, oh. I leaned back on my radio, oh, oh. Some cat was laying down some rock and roll at a sunset. Then the loud sound, it seemed to fade out.
Music from David Bowie on the Richie Allen Show, 29 minutes to the top of the hour. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter for any comments and any questions for our guest today. He was on the programme back in November and I really enjoyed it. It was one of the highlights for me of 2017 because his area of expertise and his field of research, well, there are many. But what we're going to talk about has become of great interest to me in the last year or so. He's an internationally recognised scholar in international politics, conflict resolution and US foreign policy, published many books and papers on those subjects. But he founded the Exopolitics Institute in 2005 and the Exopolitics Journal in 2006. In fact, you can read all about him at exopolitics.org. He's published a number of fascinating books, very well reviewed and best-selling books on this subject. I will tweet out links to where you can read those. And as he mentioned it to us back in November, he said to me, Richie, my brand new book will be out in late winter, early spring, and it's about Antarctica. And indeed it is out, it has been published, and it's available at all good online retailers. Again, I will put a link out. It's called Antarctica's Hidden History, Corporate Foundations of Secret Space Programs. It's a great thrill to welcome back to the programme Dr. Michael Sala. Michael, welcome back. How are you? And he dropped out there. Just as I was welcoming him to the programme, he dropped out. Let's get him back. That's a funny one, that, isn't it? Just as I was saying hello, the call dropped out. Well, there you go.
The person whom you're trying to reach is currently unavailable.
Now, you're not supposed to hear that.
Leave a message after the beep.
Right, well, we won't leave a message. We'll give him a minute and we'll get him back on. He might have stepped outside the room to grab a glass of water or something like that. In the meantime, massive amount of tweets came in, by the way, during the monologue about the John Mann witch hunt that's currently underway in... it's not currently. It's been underway for quite a while. But how that's ramping up, we might talk about that. I think we might have Michael now. No, we don't, in fact, have Michael. Do we? No, we don't. There's shenanigans afoot because Michael is texting me to say, try again, Richie, and I have done. But we're getting the old voice message. I don't know. We'll try. I've asked him to call me. We'll see, can we get it up and running? These are the things that used to terrify presenters back in the day when things go wrong. There could be we could do a programme, actually. I could dig out archive material when radio shows go horribly wrong. Michael, welcome.
Aloha, Richie. Glad to be here.
Aloha, sir. It's very good to have you here. I don't know what happened there. I called you and then I got the voice message and then I called you again and I got the voice message again. But thank God you're here. I gave you such a wonderful introduction, Michael. And then the call dropped out. So it's great to have you back. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Let me...
thank you. Yes, it's...
Sorry, Michael, go ahead.
Yes, it's been a long project in terms of understanding what's been happening down in Antarctica. So I'm very happy that the book's complete and now that the information that I've gathered over the last year can be discussed and analysed more closely by people, because there's really a lot of fundamental shifts in the way we look at the world when we examine what's been going on in Antarctica.
Brilliant. Now, it's the third book in a series. Tell our listeners a little bit more about that, about this current series.
Okay, the series is the Secret Space Program book series, and basically it looks at all of the evidence that's come out over the last 3 years or so about secret space programs, what has been really extraordinary is there have been a number of insiders that have emerged with a lot of detailed information about these secret space programs built by, developed by the US Navy, developed by the Air Force, developed by a transnational corporate conglomerate. Even the United Nations has a space program, according to some of these sources. So the book series examines all of these different sources and sees, well, you know, what evidence is there to back it up? You know, what documents, what historical evidence can we find to support that indeed these programs did exist and have been developed secretly and continue to operate today?
And that's the most important thing, continue to be operated today. Now, the new book, and again, I will put links out to where people can find it. It's it goes back as far as the First World War, Michael, in terms of when Antarctica comes into the picture. Tell us about what was going on during the First World War and at the end of World War One.
Well, at the end of World War One, Germany had lost all its colonies, and so there was a deep kind of introspection by the German elite in terms of how to rebuild Germany and regain some of its former glory. And so people in Germany, many people involved in these secret societies, they began to embrace some of the older traditions and philosophies concerning their connection with this ancient inner Earth civilization called Hyperborea. And the capital of Hyperborea was Ultima Thule, and so this was the name that this group gave to itself. They called themselves the Thule Society. And so they began to sponsor and support all sorts of projects to help regain Germany's glory. And one of these was this the efforts by Maria Osich, who was a psychic, to establish contact with these otherworldly beings. And so she established contact with this group that claimed to be from another star system, Aldebaran. And from that, the Thule Society funded the development, the research and development of some of these space-time devices that Osich was getting information about. And that became the basis for Germany in the 1920s developing a secret space program that, to begin with, was civilian. I mean, that's important to emphasize, that it was a civilian program run by German secret societies with all of these esoteric people like Osich, along with scientists who were able to combine and integrate this kind of esoteric information with the hard sciences. And so, you know, as a result of that collaboration between mystics, scientists, and secret societies, the Germans by the early 1930s had developed the first prototype spacecraft. These were craft that could not only fly into space, escape Earth orbit using kind of anti-gravity technologies, but also travel through space-time so that they could travel long distances. So these were the very first craft developed in the early 1930s. And 1933, Hitler comes to power, and so he begins to subsume all of this into the Third Reich. And then with the opening up of Antarctica in 1938-39, he begins to move a lot of this research and development on these space programs down to Antarctica, for two purposes. One was to basically ensure that nothing would happen to this research if the war effort turned out bad, and the other was because there was a need to separate what the secret societies were doing in terms of wanting to go into deep space, colonize other worlds, with what the Third Reich wanted to do, which was to weaponize these technologies for the war effort. And so there was a separation. So Antarctica was kind of like this this building ground for this future space program that would become a colonial force.
This is incredible, Michael. So Hitler and his allies in the Nazi Party, they found out that German, very wealthy German secret society types had managed to either reverse engineer technology to create their own anti-gravitational spaceship. You're touching on really, really interesting stuff here now, because you mentioned the weaponization. You would have assumed that the Nazis did everything they could to commandeer that and to use that in the war effort against, because of course it ended up fighting a war on two fronts, fighting obviously eventually, fighting Russia, of course, in the east, and then, obviously fighting the Allies in the west. Why wasn't Hitler successful, Michael, in doing that, in using that technology?
Well, one of the important things to keep in mind here is that Hitler was not the ultimate ruler of Germany, as many people mistakenly assume. He was a totalitarian leader, but he was put in place by these German secret societies who also formed the elite leadership around Hitler. So Hitler was more or less someone that was given clear marching orders in terms of the kind of areas that he had responsibility over. But the German secret societies, when it came to certain things like the economy, certain areas like Antarctica, they really ran the show. So it was these German societies that ran the show in Antarctica and the German economy. Hitler certainly started the war effort, but I mean, a lot of the war effort brought massive profits to German corporations and yes, these leading industrialists. It was just when Hitler started to make some really bad choices, like declaring war on the United States, starting war against the Soviet Union without having ended the war in the Western Front, and also ignoring the requests to use some of these advanced technologies for defensive purposes, as opposed to his idea that somehow some of these advanced technologies could be used for building strategic jet bombers that could basically bomb the United States, bomb New York and so forth. So as a result of all of these things, Hitler's poor strategic choices led to the Third Reich losing the war. But the German secret societies, I mean, they had securely established themselves in Antarctica. And in 1944, when it was clear that the war effort was lost, they had convened a secret meeting in Strasbourg, France today, where German industrialists met with Martin Bormann, who was the deputy Führer, and basically a plan was set upon, it was developed whereby all, as much of the industrialist power, finances, resources, and so forth would be shipped out of Germany to safe neutral countries or friendly allied countries. And basically, after the war ended, that Germany would rebuild itself into an economic power and through economic means establish a Fourth Reich. And so, when you combine the German industrialist power that was allowed to escape the collapse of the war by relocating a lot of resources, personnel and capital to other countries, along with what was going on in Antarctica, you had a basis for the Fourth Reich re-emerging secretly.
Michael, this is great stuff, because you're talking about companies like Hoechst, IG Farben, BASF and others, these massive industrialist pharmaceutical giants that initially backed Hitler to the hilt because they wanted a post-World War II world with fascism reigning so that they could enjoy the spoils of the spoils of a world controlled by basically a single government. So this is fascinating stuff, this. So all these guys then, they escaped, as you said, basically punishment. They escaped any consequences for having supported the Nazis and what the Nazis were doing. Where, by the way, folks, Michael, Dr. Michael Sala is on the line. We're talking about Antarctica's hidden history, Corporate Foundations of Secret Space Programs, Volume 3 of the Secret Space Program series. It's Michael's latest book. It's just been published. There's already some terrific reviews for it. You can find it, of course, on all good online retailers. Do check it out. Now, Michael, while all of this was going on, were the United Kingdom and the United States governments in the loop? Did they know in the early 1930s that the German secret societies had reverse engineered or had designed a spacecraft, and were they aware of what was going on in Antarctica?
There was that awareness. I mean, one of the things that, again, it's worth emphasizing is that, you know, there has always been close cooperation between U.S. corporations and German corporations throughout the 20s and 30s. Major U.S. corporations, banks and so forth, the Rockefeller family is well known. The Bush family was also involved. And some of the major German companies like the Thyssen family, the Krupp family, all of these guys basically formed a kind of international fraternity of industrialists that were basically helping Germany rebuild after the devastating First World War. So this was really what was behind this kind of reindustrialization of Germany. So there was a lot of cooperation there between the leading companies, and they basically saw the connection between themselves as really being in many ways stronger and deeper than their national affiliation.
Right.
And so during the Second World War, you had a number of American companies that continued to work with Nazi Germany throughout the World War, and they actually had exemptions from the Roosevelt administration. So, for example, International Telegraph and Telephone Company, IT&T, had received special exemption to have its subsidiaries continue to operate in Nazi Germany during
right?
the war.
Wow, that's very interesting, that, Michael. What you're saying here is so relevant to today, because you're saying that sovereignty doesn't matter to these people. To these elites, sovereign nations doesn't matter. They cross borders and do whatever they bloody well like, right? That's what we're saying here.
That's absolutely correct, Richie. It's a transnational elite. And we need to really understand that this transnational elite, even though they may be born and bred and raised in a particular country, their primary allegiance is to their class. And this is what we saw that happened in Germany as a result of the cooperation between the German companies and the U.S. companies. And after the defeat of Germany, and the kind of establishment of this Fourth Reich through companies, German companies, having established subsidiaries and outlets in South America and in Antarctica, the cooperation with U.S. companies began again and deepened, because now the Germans had developed all of this really incredible advanced technology in Antarctica, and they were flying spacecraft out of Antarctica to the moon, to Mars.
Wow.
They were flying their craft all over the United States, and American companies wanted a piece of that pie, so they formed a partnership with the full blessing of the Eisenhower administration.
Michael, there's a lot of tweets coming in with questions and comments. We will get to them. We'll leave them for now. Dr. Michael Sala is live on the line from Hawaii. It's great to have him back on the programme. Spoke to him back in November. I make no secret that this area of expertise is of great interest to me. I've become very interested in this in the last year or so. I really have. I've always been honest. I would have been very dismissive of this type of thing in the past. Not rudely, but I would have been dismissive of it, but not anymore. Antarctica's Hidden History, Corporate Foundations of Secret Space Programs. Now, Michael, they didn't choose Antarctica because it's out of the way, because it's a million miles away from anywhere. There were other special reasons why they chose Antarctica. Am I right?
There are other reasons, and Antarctica was a place that has an ancient history too. There are a number of hidden bases in Antarctica, and one of the things that the Germans were helped in was finding some of these ancient bases where they could build their own bases that would be the center for this German secret space program out of Antarctica. And so there were technologies, ancient technologies dating back tens of thousands of years old, that were these civilizations that the Germans were aware of. And later on, with the collaboration of the US military industrial complex, the transnational corporate conglomerate, this fusion of German American companies with other friendly allied countries such as Britain, Canada, or Australia, they began to develop this network or this very powerful program in Antarctica where they would study all of these ancient technologies that had been left in Antarctica. And so this is one of the areas that continues to be of interest, because it's like these technologies provide us, the rest of humanity, a means of being able to supersede or overcome the kind of fossil fuel industry. And this is something that the Germans were aware of from very early on.
There's so much in this, Michael. There are so many aspects to this. Obviously, keeping people in wage slavery. And, you know, you and I spoke briefly last November, you know, about energy and free energy. We're going to talk about these ancient bases in Antarctica. But I want to take you back to something you said a couple of minutes ago. And that is that 80, 90 years ago, they were using these engineered spacecrafts to go to the moon and to Mars. Now, what were they doing on Mars, Michael? And tell us about the evidence that you found that shows that they did make it to Mars. What was going on with them traveling to Mars 80, 90 years ago?
Well, the first person to actually start coming out saying that the Germans had had sent spacecraft to Mars was Vladimir Tuzinski. And what he did was, he came out in 1991. He was a member of the Bulgarian Academy of Sciences. He was an engineer, and he had come across papers, NASA papers, detailing the German space program. And this was something that he released in lectures, a number of lectures, in the early 1990s. Now, you know, people widely ignored him because they thought it was preposterous, the idea that the Germans had escaped and established these bases in Antarctica where they were able to fly to the moon and Mars. But Tuzinski did have a number of documents, and it's well known that after the end of the Cold War, a lot of the secret files that the KGB had were released and basically sold to the highest bidder. So a bunch of these papers get released, and Tuzinski discussed them, and he showed the papers in his lectures. And so you got to see the test files on the various prototypes that the Germans had successfully developed, like the Vril series of craft and the Hannibal series of craft. And these documents basically outlined the number of prototype craft that were developed, the number that were tested, and some of the German companies, the German companies that developed the different technologies for these spacecraft. So this is what Tuzinski described that he came across in the early 1990s. And now we fast forward to the recent era, and we have people like William Tompkins, who was a former covert operative for the US Navy, and he released a bunch of documents showing that he was part of a covert Navy operation that had embedded Navy spies in Nazi Germany throughout the Second World War, and that they were reporting back about these advanced technologies, aerospace technologies, that the Germans had built. And that the Germans had successfully relocated a lot of these technologies into Antarctica. So Good has supplied Tompkins supplied his documentation and some descriptions of the craft that the Germans had developed. And later we have people like Corey Good and Clark McClelland, other insiders that have knowledge of these secret space programs, saying the same thing, that Antarctica was a place that the Germans had successfully relocated to and had built a huge functional space program.
Incredible. And they were able to go to Mars and the moon. And this was years before the United States Apollo missions to the moon, which must have bemused everybody who was involved in those experiments and those flights from Antarctica. Dr. Michael Sala is live on the line. I'm going to just read a few comments there because a lot of them have come in understandably on Twitter. You can tweet at Richie Allen Show to make a comment for Michael. Omari tweets, Richie, can you ask Michael to clarify that they flew to Mars and how? That came in a few minutes ago, so Michael has answered that there. Martin in Spain said this could be a connection to Archons and the overall control system there. That's Martin. Thanks for that, Martin. A number of people have talked about Aleister Crowley and asking about his involvement in this. Jeff tweets, it's rumoured there's a hole into underground bases in Antarctica, that there's some hole or some doorway to these bases. We'll come to that in a minute as well. David tweets about Crowley as well. Was Crowley really MI6 sent to infiltrate these secret societies? Massive amount of comments on it. Green Sky tweets, that's about Jeremy Corbyn and the Zionists. Let me just scroll on down there. A lot of comments about the space program as we know it today. And is that just a front? That's a great question, isn't it, Michael? NASA and its programs today, are those just nonsensical programs designed to keep people thinking that where we are now is we're still struggling to send people to Mars, we're still struggling to, you know, send people further afield than the moon? That's a great question. So we'll deal with that for a minute. Go ahead.
Sure, that is a good question because NASA, I do agree, is a cover program. But it's really more of a cover program for the Fourth Reich's space activities. Because when you look at the extent of NASA programs and you look at the people that rose to senior positions in NASA to begin with, NASA was formed 1959, 1960 by President Eisenhower. And the people that went into senior positions in NASA were Germans, which, you know, sounds incredible now to think of it. But, you know, you had Wernher von Braun, who was in charge of the Marshall Flight Center. You had Kurt de Bus, another Nazi involved in the V-1, V-2 rockets out of Peenemünde and Nordhausen. He was the head of the Kennedy Space Center. So you had a bunch of these German scientists that were heading NASA. And it's like, well, why were they there? And it's like, on the one hand, sure, they were the undisputed leaders in rocket propulsion technologies. So that's why they had these prominent positions in NASA and previously with the U.S. Army missile program out of Redstone, Alabama. But I think really when you dig a little deeper, what you see is that this was really a cover program, because the Nazis, or the, you know, von Braun and de Bus, they understood that there was a more advanced space program operating in Antarctica, and their job through NASA was to provide a cover, so that way people wouldn't ask questions about, you know, strange things that were being observed, or flights to the moon or Mars or Jupiter or the Saturn and the different moons of these planetary objects, that all the activities that astronomers or amateur astronomers could observe through their telescopes pertaining to these planets that might signify secret space program activities, all of these things could be explained in terms of NASA. And so I think NASA has, from the very beginning, been a cover program for the secret space programs, and in particular for the Fourth Reich's secret space program out of Antarctica.
Yeah, it's just amazing, the idea that they would be there to make people think that if it's a snakes and ladders board, NASA is there to make us think that we're on square five or square six, But in reality, because of what's been known secretly, we might be on square 75 or 78. It's extraordinary. Michael Sala is our guest. Do check out exopolitics.org. We're talking about the brand new book, Antarctica's Hidden History, Corporate Foundations of Secret Space Programs. Go to exopolitics.org. You can order it from there, but it's available at all good online retailers as well. So, Michael, when the... We're going to take a break in a minute and then come back and talk about all the ancient stuff that was already at Antarctica. Presumably, when they were discovering things in Antarctica, as well as finding out how to make these... This might sound like a stupid question, but as well as finding out how to engineer these crafts, they also found out how to navigate space and not be affected by radiation. But that's a stupid question, because the craft building itself was... they were building craft that were designed to protect bodies from radiation. That's, I suppose, the obvious answer. And when they got to Mars, what did they do there, Michael? Did they leave any evidence that they were there?
Well, the first trips to Mars, according to Tyszynski, were unsuccessful. But by the late 1940s, they had successfully established bases on Mars. And through a long series of trials and experiments, they were able to establish bases on Mars and in the underground regions of Mars. They were able to find lava tubes. I mean, this is one of the things, Richie, that we really need to appreciate, that not only the Earth, but Mars, the Moon, and many planetary bodies have very extensive lava tube systems. And so if you know what to look for, when you find these lava tube systems, you can actually go in there and build bases. I mean, they're very safe from the external environment, because Mars at one point was a very volcanic planet. I mean, the biggest volcano on the planet, Olympus Mons, is biggest volcano in the solar system, Olympus Mons, is on Mars. So that has an extensive lava tube system throughout Mars. So the Germans were looking for these lava tube systems where they could enter in and establish bases. And so that was where they first began establishing bases in the 1940s and 50s. And then by the late 1950s, after agreements were reached with the Eisenhower administration, and they had an infusion of people and resources, they could build out these bases on Mars. And so essentially that's what happened. And to begin with, the Germans understood there were two ways to get to Mars. One, of course, was rocket technology, and they used some of their Hanabu 3 craft to fly to Mars because they're capable of kind of interplanetary travel. And they also used portal technology. This is one of the things that the Germans began understanding from the very beginning, from the 1920s, when they began being given information about space-time travel, that they began to understand how space-time works and how if you generate a sufficiently large kind of torsion field, you can actually disrupt space-time, and so you can actually move through space and time. And so they became familiar with portal systems, so you could actually on Earth create a portal or find a portal and tinker with it and basically come out on the other side on Mars. So apparently this is one of the things that the Germans learned about during their research in these areas. So by the 1950s, the Germans had built bases on Mars, and these were expanded with US corporate assistance. And by the 60s and 70s, these bases on Mars became so developed that later on you had a lot of people being taken from Earth to basically populate these bases and to bring a lot of scientific know-how so that these bases could become self-sufficient and become a kind of economic power in their own right. So when we fast forward to the present day, are these bases on Mars that were established in the 40s and 50s by the Germans and then the Americans in collaboration have now become self-sufficient and in many ways are autonomous. So they are kind of like a power unto themselves at this very moment.
Michael, we're going to take a very quick break when we come back because time has flown by already. And there are some really interesting questions from our listeners that I want to get into. And we've probably got, with your permission, another 25, 30 minutes today. So I'm going to take a very quick break. Dr. Michael Salla is our guest. The book is Antarctica's Hidden History, Corporate Foundations of Secret Space Programs. Fascinating stuff, this. It's about 90 seconds to 2 minutes, Michael. If you want to grab a glass of water there or something, you've got time to do that. I'll read some tweets when I come back anyway. Very quick break. More with Dr. Michael Salla in 2 minutes.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester. We're on TuneIn Radio as well, triggerwarning.tv and richieallen.co.uk. It's exactly 8 minutes past the hour. Dr. Michael Salla, Exopolitics' own Dr. Michael Salla, is live on the line from Hawaii. We're discussing his brand new book, Antarctica's Hidden History, Corporate Foundations of Secret Space Programs. Fascinating stuff, this. It really is. Michael, thanks for staying with me. Questions and comments are flying in, and they're very interesting. I have one from Liz about the moon, who asks me to ask you, what does Michael think about the moon? Is it real? Is it a spacecraft? Is it hollow? You can be as quick with these answers if you want, Michael, because there are four or five of these questions. What do you think of the moon? Is it a space station? Is it hollow? What is it, Michael?
It really is an artificial body that was brought into Earth's orbit several tens of thousands of years ago, and it was a base, and it has extensive underground facilities, caverns, and it is populated not just by various secret space programs, but also different extraterrestrial civilizations.
Really interesting stuff, that. It kind of aligns with some of what David Icke has talked about to me over the years about the moon. John Kerr tweets, Richie, what does Michael think of, or has he heard anything about, a pyramid under Antarctica? And finally, why does Michael think that so many heads of state and religious leaders, why have they visited Antarctica? This is great, of course, because, of course, it's why it's so fascinating. It's why Michael has written this book. What about a pyramid, Michael, and what about the rush of state leaders to Antarctica in recent times?
Well, that's a really fascinating question. Pyramids are things that have been found in the ancient world all over different continents, and they are in Antarctica. Now, they, for the most part, are buried under miles of ice. So, the various structures that people see on the surface through Google Earth, many of these might just be geological formations, but the major pyramids are under the ice, and these are the things that are being discovered in secret excavations, because the beings in Antarctica did use these for various purposes, technologies, power generation, kind of like life extension. And there have been a lot of visitors, VIP visitors to Antarctica since 2002, who have been taken on tours to see some of the ancient ruins, the pyramids under Antarctica, the artifacts that have been found down there, and these VIPs have been given a kind of heads up so that when disclosure happens, that they'll be part of that initial group of kind of experts or reliable witnesses that can assure the public that, you know, things are fine, it's okay, they've been there, and that these are kind of marvels, and they can help our civilization advance pretty quickly.
I did mention last time we were on, Michael, I always put my cards on the table. I'm very interested in your area of research, and I've come to understand so much of what I was brought up to believe is in fact nonsense. And I did say earlier on that I would have been dismissive of this field of research in the past. Now I'm very interested in it. I'm very open-minded about it. But as usual, you know, when you do programs like this, there are people, and they're polite, to be fair to them, they say, Richie, this is a bit mad, this. It's going way over my head. This is really hard to swallow. You've had this, Michael, your entire career, because, of course, you come from a very academic background, of course, as well. When people say to you, I just can't get my head around this, this can't be real, do you listen to that? Do you entertain it? Or do you just kind of move on? How do you deal with that?
Oh, well, I think it's always a fair question, like, what's the evidence? But I understand, from my background working in human rights conflicts around the world, that often, the evidence isn't there, or that you can't find it. Not that evidence doesn't exist. It's just that you, as a researcher, or when you interview witnesses, eyewitnesses, for example, or people who have been subjected to this, the evidence isn't there. So you're interested in the truth, what happened to them. So I think the situation is the same with these insiders, these people who say, like Corey Good, or like Dr. Pete Peterson, who say that they've been to Antarctica as part of these covert operations, and they have really incredible stories to share about what they saw. Now, they don't have the evidence, but to me it's like, okay, that's just one of the difficulties we have to handle, but the truth is still there. I mean, the truth doesn't disappear just because you don't have evidence. You can always find the truth. You just have to exercise common sense, and you need to be kind of like very discerning. And I've tried to do that as much as I can with people like Corey and Pete Peterson and the others like Dzinski and Clark McClelland and the other insiders who have information about Antarctica. But the thing that I take a lot of encouragement from is that recently many scientific papers have been released about Antarctica, about cavern systems in Antarctica, about the thermal heating that occurs under the ice in Antarctica, which substantiates, what Bill Tompkins, Corey Good and the others have been saying.
Do you know, I've had a tweet from Mwinga. This is really interesting. By the way, Dr. Michael Sala on the line, Antarctica's Hidden History, Corporate Foundations of Secret Space Programs. Michael, I really like that answer because it ties into, I did a lot of reading and listening to talks that you'd given in advance of our conversation in November. And I came to like you a lot in your style. You're very honest about what you've got evidence to demonstrate and what is speculation. And I think that's probably why people like listening to you and like reading you. It's a great way to be that. And I love it. That's why I'm interested in you. I mean, I'm a journalist. I'm an academic mind, or I am academically minded myself. I'm drawn to you because of your refreshing honesty about what's out there in terms of what you can prove and what you can't prove. It's really good stuff. Here's a fascinating tweet from Mwinga. And he sent me an article that was published in the New York Times in 2015 that said, back in 2015, 1.5 million African Americans were missing. And apparently somebody called Dick Gregory and one or two others suggested that these men may have been repatriated to, whether it's a colony somewhere else, whether it's off planet or whatever. Now, I know that's wild speculation, but if 1.5 million black men were missing in 2015, African Americans, it begs the question, where did they go? Michael, have you heard that, and are you aware of the speculation that these men might be part of some program?
I have heard that. It's actually a very disturbing part of this research that I've been doing into secret space programs, that many people have been forcibly taken into these programs and used as unwilling subjects in experiments, or used as forced labor in various industrial programs, or even worse, are basically traded as slaves in the galactic slave trade.
Wow.
Because when you think of it in terms of what would be the currency, what is the universal currency? If there are other civilizations out there in the galaxy, what would be a useful form of currency? Genetics. And see, we on Earth, we have a really varied genetic pool. So this is one of the things that it can be traded. And I think this is what's been going on. And certainly there have been a number of insiders that I've mentioned in this book that talk about a galactic slave trade, that talk about on Mars, Antarctica, and even there are research and development areas in Antarctica where these transnational corporations build up facilities or build bases where they have up to 10,000. Imagine this, Richie, up to 10,000 abducted humans from around the world put into these simulated environments, and they're subjected to some experiment, whatever that is, biological, some kind of social mind control experiment. And at the end of the experiment, I mean, these people are terminated. I mean, I think this is what's happening to a lot of the missing people.
They'd be murdered.
Yeah.
And if anybody thinks that people wouldn't do that, there are hundreds of thousands of people murdered a year by our governments, directly, not indirectly, by psychopathic personalities who walk the corridors of power, who don't care about people in Yemen, who don't care about people in Libya or in Syria or anywhere else for that matter. So I could get my head around that. We've got Michael for another 10-15 minutes. There are an enormous amount of questions. I'll get to one or two more if I can, but we're talking about his brand new book. Go to exopolitics.org, by the way. The book is Antarctica's Hidden History, Corporate Foundations of Secret Space Programs. It's volume 3 in the Secret Space Programs series. Michael, presumably somebody, we talked about these secret societies earlier on, somebody figured out that there was something special about Antarctica. Have we been able to narrow down who that was? Because this information was buried deep in the ice, from what you're telling us, for a long, long time. But in modern times, and of course 100 years ago is still modern times, or 150 years ago, did somebody come across this, Michael? Was there one man or one woman, or was this stuff passed through the elites? Was it passed through their generations from fathers to sons and so on, so on?
Well, I think that in terms of Antarctica as a place for human colonization, the first evidence that I found of that was from a 1936 document that the Third Reich had put out for colonizing Antarctica. So this is in the 1936, during the Olympic Games, or that year, that the Germans came out with a plan that Antarctica would be the place for a future German colony. And so this is where, you know, we get the influence of the German secret society. So the Thule Society and some of the other more secretive groups. Some people mentioned Aleister Crowley early on. You know, he's connected to the Black Sun Society. This is a kind of like very esoteric, dark group that were part of the German secret societies. So these people decided that Antarctica was a place that they wanted to establish future colonies. And I think it's because they knew that their ancestors, that the ancestors of all of these secret societies came from Antarctica. So this is one of the things I discuss in the book, like the idea of the fallen angels. Well, who are the fallen angels? You know, that's discussed in the book of Genesis. It's discussed at length in the book of Enoch. And who are the fallen angels? Well, these were beings from Mars who had crash landed in Antarctica as much as 50,000 years ago. And they then began to establish worldwide colonies. And as a result of their colonies, they began to interbreed with humans in these various colonies and created a kind of hybrid race. And this hybrid race are the origins of the secret societies. And these secret societies know that Antarctica is the birthplace of their kind of global culture as it was first established 50,000-60,000 years ago. And so when Germany reached a sufficient level of kind of technical scientific knowledge, they wanted the Third Reich to basically establish these bases in Antarctica because they wanted to find the artifacts of their ancestors.
Again, massive amount of tweets coming in. Folks, if you want to see what other people are tweeting, go to twitter.com where it says search Twitter. Just put Richie Allen Show. That's all one word. Press enter. Michael is on Twitter, by the way. I tweeted Michael today, so you can find my tweet to him on my Twitter. It's at Michael Sala there. Follow Michael there as well. Let me just read it. Was it Kat who tweeted from Edinburgh? Kat, who says, I believe pretty much everything Michael is saying, but I'm not yet convinced that they were able to go to Mars or the moon, says Kat. Thanks for that, Kat. Yeah, it was Kat in Edinburgh who said that there. She's fascinated by this. Ian tweets, if the Apollo missions were real, how do the rockets propel in the vacuum of space? I suppose that's a good question, Michael. Not to be rude to Ian, it is a good question. Rockets propelling in the vacuum of space, how does that work?
Well, that just operates on well-understood Newtonian physics. For every force, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So when you expel liquid propellants at a very high velocity at the back of a rocket, that will propel it forward. And so even though you're in the vacuum of space, just Newtonian laws of physics do apply.
Omari tweets, Richie, I've seen the Dick Gregory interview with him saying that about the black men going missing. A lot of black men have been going missing for years. It's the genetics that they want, like Michael says. Michael is spot on, says Omari. Dick Gregory ran for president of the United States. Do have a read about that. Liz Froud James tweets, children go missing too, Richie. Is this relevant? Children do go missing. And we know that thousands of children who have been put into care, taken from their families, do go missing in this country. What about the UK, Michael? We've talked about the United States and we've talked about the Germany, of course. What about the UK, which fancies itself and has fancied itself for centuries as an empire, as a great power, a great player in world politics? Does the UK have any input into what's going on?
Oh, definitely, yes. The UK is a major player in the secret space programs. They have been a partner for the United States from the very beginning in sharing a lot of the technologies that they had gotten into their possession during the Second World War. They shared a lot of the intelligence data about the Germans in Antarctica. The British sent special, the SAS down to Antarctica 1945-46 to kind of like find the German bases down there and get control, but they were unsuccessful, as was Operation High Jump. But here's the thing, Richie, and I'm sure you've covered this before with David Icke, is that you know, Britain has a long esoteric history. And because you had German secret societies that were behind the German war effort, similarly you had British secret societies behind the war effort as well. But after the war, these secret societies basically began collaborating again, and I think that the British aristocracy, many of those probably have a lot of information about what's going on down in Antarctica.
So, Michael, this continues. Just in the couple of minutes we have left, this continues. We believe that there are pyramids there. We believe that there are definitely portals there. I really liked you talking about that earlier on, because when people think about a planet maybe 2 or 3 million light years away, well, with what we know through the work of Einstein, and even just what you would call kind of mainstream scientists, Hawking and people like that, we know that time and space can be bent and can be folded, can be manipulated. So it could be possible to travel a million light years in maybe a few minutes, or maybe even less than that. So all of this is there, and we have, you know, I've interviewed people like Timothy Good over the years and others, and they say that beings from other dimensions walk amongst us. They are here. They might be, you know, they might be on your street, that you might be working with them. All fascinating stuff. The question I have is, as we're becoming more technically advanced, and by we I mean because there's the elite and then there's the rest of us, is it becoming more difficult, Michael, for the people that are based in Antarctica? Is it becoming more difficult for them to conceal it? I suppose that might sound like a stupid question, because I'm talking to you and you're researching it and you're bringing information out all the time, you and others. Is it getting more difficult for them to hide what they're doing?
Yes, that's definitely been happening. And I think a lot of that has to do with the Antarctic ice sheets being melted by various geological processes. And in particular, Antarctica's volcanic system, which is the largest volcanic system on Earth, it's just been confirmed last year by University of Edinburgh scientists, that there is roughly 130 volcanoes under the ice, and they're now becoming active. And as they become active, they're generating a lot of energy, which is melting the ice, which is generating vast caverns, which is creating these holes all the way from the continental shelf of Antarctica itself, all the way to the surface of the ice. So that's the holes people are seeing. So things are melting. Some of these artifacts that are buried kind of like near the surface of the ice, they're increasingly being exposed. You have various countries that have bases on Antarctica sending teams to find these artifacts and study them. And so more and more people are learning about the ancient civilizations in Antarctica, are learning about some of the secret bases that are buried under the ice there. And so it's becoming harder and harder to keep it all hidden. And so I think this is where very, very soon we're probably going to see some major disclosures about Antarctica, about what's been happening down there. And maybe, which is going to be the biggest shock, that the Germans did succeed in building building these large bases in the caverns of Antarctica.
You sound so excited about it, Michael. Final question. Are there interdimensional entities, do you believe, manipulating many of those who have been operating, many of those, let's call them humans, who have been operating in Antarctica? Is there a bit of a battle going on between interdimensional entities, do you think?
Oh, yeah, that's a really important question. I mean, the whole idea of the Archons and the yeah. Chimera, all of these interdimensional beings. Yes, certainly, they do exist. I think there's one of the things I've learned in doing this research is that you have to be really discerning. definitely there are a lot of good forces out there, good extraterrestrials, good high-dimensional entities, but there's also evil, malevolent ones as well that use trickery, that use deception. So, you know, there's no substitute for discernment. There's no substitute for getting as much information as you can and making wise choices about who to work with and who to trust. And, yeah, that's a constant process. But, yes, we need to be mindful that, you know, there are beings out there that do employ trickery and deception, and we have to be on the lookout for them all the time.
Michael, it was great having you back on. It really was. Congratulations on the publication of the book. We spoke about it back in November. You were very excited about it. You sound incredibly excited, Michael. You sound like maybe, you know, I mean, when we leave this body, we don't die, of course. So you don't have to fear death. Because somebody said to me when I spoke to you in November, one of your avid readers, they said, it must be terrible to be Michael because he must think, you know, oh, I might have 40 years left on the planet. I might have 50 and I'll die and then developments will happen or revelations will come to light. But of course, that's not true because when we leave this body, we don't die and our consciousness kind of moves on. But you sound incredibly excited about the things that are happening at the moment. Antarctica's hidden history, Corporate Foundations of Secret Space Programs is Michael's new book. Go to any good online bookseller. Do go to exopolitics.org. Twas a pleasure, Michael. I'm going to give you the very last word, my friend. Thanks for coming back. Final word to you.
Well, thank you, Richie, for having me on the show and for just giving me this platform to share this information. And I think, yeah, people just pay attention to what's happening in Antarctica. That might well be the key for understanding the mystery of what's been happening over the last century or so on planet Earth.
Michael, the very best of luck with the book. I'm sure it'll be received as well and with as much success as your previous books. Exopolitics.org, folks. And I look forward to catching up with you again this year, Michael, to talk about these issues further. And we'll maybe develop further the interdimensional entity theme and archons and that. That'd be lovely, Michael. Thanks again. Enjoy the rest of your day, my friend. Great to speak with you.
Thank you. Aloha.
Aloha, Michael. That was Dr. Michael Sala live on the line to us there from his home in Hawaii, exopolitics.org. Fascinating stuff, this. It really is. I'm very interested in it. My interest in it came about, I suppose, through speaking with people like Jim Mars and others. And I mentioned Timothy Good there. Timothy Good spoke to me many times when I was based in Spain. And I was interested in it and, you know, I took a lot of it with a kind of a large grain of salt and I didn't pursue it and I was happy to talk about it. But I ultimately kind of just kind of put it to one side and was kind of dismissive, but not in a rude way. I was more kind of serving the interests of the listeners at the time, but I've become hugely interested in this field of research in the last couple of years. I really have. Dr. Michael Sala. Right, I suppose the thing to do is to take a very quick break. When I come back, I'll read more of your comments. I think I got to most questions there, which I'm kind of happy about. But I will read your comments when I come back. This is Thursday's Richie Allen Show live on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 and triggerwarning.tv.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Welcome back. Really enjoyed Michael. I'll say that again. In case you're joining the programme late, you might have been out working. You might have had a couple of beers after work. Fascinating development in the Sergei Skripal, Yulia Skripal story today. In case you were on planet Mars, eh? See what I did there? And you've not been following that. He's the former double agent whom was taken ill 4 weeks ago, nearly 4 weeks ago, and his daughter was with him. They were taken ill. The UK government was quick to say that he was poisoned by a nerve agent or a chemical weapon or something like that. And they've blamed Russia for it with no evidence. You've been following it. You know the story. Well, Martin Brunt of Sky News spoke a couple of days ago with, allegedly, Skripal's only English friend, a guy called Cassidy. What was it again? Was it Roy Cassidy? I can't remember now. I've got my little notebook there. Ross Cassidy, there you go. Thank God for notebooks. Ross Cassidy, who said he was his best pal, former next-door neighbour of him. And Cassidy said their condition is so bad they should be allowed to die. Well, it came to light today that Yulia Skripal, thankfully, we don't know her. We won't virtue signal, but we don't know her. But thankfully, apparently is awake, is talking, and is responding to treatment. Now, some of you wags, and I don't mean wives and girlfriends, some of you wags on Twitter were quick to say, when she does speak to the press, she'll blame Putin, which is possibly the case. Bizarre stuff, though. You know, they've tried to say now that the greatest concentration of this Novichok agent, chemical agent, was found on the front door of the Skripal's house. This has got to be bollocks, right? It's got to be bollocks. Because you have to imagine when a country, and don't be under any illusion, every single government in the world has at one time or another ordered the murder of one of its citizens. It has happened millions of times in human history, and it still goes on. Every government, not just the Russians, not just the North Koreans or the Iranians, the Axis of Evil, right? What a load of bollocks that was. Everybody kills their own citizens. And when they do so, they employ very talented men and women to do it. And the idea that some, they're not called the KGB anymore. What are they called again? Jesus. Something F. Right. I'm having one of those nights. All of my common knowledge, general knowledge, you see. It's almost like I had a drink. I didn't have a drink. All of my general knowledge is disappearing. What are they called again? The Russian Secret Service Agency. It's not the KGB anymore. Anyway. If they're going to kill Skripal, they're not going to chuck a bit of nerve agent against the front door, right? And hope that he kind of gets some of it on his hands or on his face. I'm not buying it. Anyway, that's the big story, in case you missed it. There's a lot more about anti-Semitism. I got into that in the monologue. If you missed that, it's all going to be on the podcast soon. A lot of happy people that we spoke with. With Michael, thank you, thank you. Hi to JP in Manchester. Hi to Kat, who I mentioned earlier, who says Michael should do a book on the North Pole and Greenland. Apparently, they are using Antarctica to distract us from there. And she puts a wink emoji there, so I don't think she's serious there. Right, let's move on down. Thanks to John Kerr. Jeff said, Richie, I've just bought Michael's book. Well, Jeff, do me a favour, when you've read it, do drop me a line on Twitter. Let me know what you think of it there. I'll be glad to hear that. I have a copy on the way. I have a copy on the way. I'm looking forward to that. My friend Jean-Anne Crowley is listening. Blame it on the Kremlin. Yeah, blame it on the Kremlin. That's right. Don't blame it on the sunshine. Don't blame it on the moonlight. Don't blame it on the good times. Blame it on the Kremlin. It's inevitable, isn't it, that Yulia Skripal is going to eventually speak to the media and say, I knew the Russians were trying to kill us. Right, I'm going to take some music to give myself a break and to give you a break from me, more importantly. It must be getting close to a bank holiday weekend. The children are starting to play. This is Bruce the Boss Springsteen at 19 minutes to the top of the hour. It's your Richie Allen Show. What else is it? My name is Richie Allen. That is my name. And this is called We Take Care of Our Own. From Bruce the Boss Springsteen, back with more nonsense after this. Don't leave me. Springsteen, We Take Care of Our Own, from the Wrecking Ball album on The Richie Allen Show, live on richieallen.co.uk, heading into a bank holiday weekend. Might just go down to Salford tomorrow. The Salford Reds playing the Catalan Dragons at midday tomorrow at the AJ Bell Stadium. Are you listening, Tez? I might just go down to Salford. Might just do that. Bit of rugby league. Rugby league, rugby unions for girls. Rugby league. I want to say hi to my friend Nigel Code as well. Not listening now, but will be listening to the podcast later on. Big fan of the information that Michael Salah talks about. Nigel's very interested in that subject. Huge interest. And it's one of the things I get criticised for, and I take the criticism. You don't do enough of that, Richie. I might not do enough, or I might not do as much as you'd like me to do, but you have to be fair with me. As a producer, presenter, I am reticent to to bring people on the programme that I think are charlatans or liars. I couldn't be arsed bringing people on just to start attacking them and having a go at them. That's very easy. I could do that all day long. I don't want to do that. I want to bring people on that I'm interested in hearing. And that's ultimately the truth about programmes like this. You know, I basically go looking for people that have got things to say that obviously they can't get on the mainstream media. But even that process is kind of, it's kind of influenced. It's obviously influenced by my own personal beliefs and personal opinions. And if I said otherwise, I would be lying. And when it comes to political matters, of course, I endeavour to get as many sides of any argument as I possibly can do. And as you know, I've regularly sought out people to come on the programme whose opinion I disagree with. That's good and it's healthy. It's good fun and it makes for a better interview. But when it comes to the esoteric stuff, which I don't have a great grounding in, I do tend to apply a kind of a bullshit test. Now, I could be very wrong, of course, in doing that, right? But it's inevitable. It's inevitable that that's going to happen. I'm going to look at people and go, yeah, like, I believe he's sincere or she's sincere, but that person, I'm not sure they're sincere. I think they're bullshitting. And I've encountered people like that over the years. And I've groaned my way through those conversations and then I've just not invited them back. It's basically what happens when you do this job, you know. I believe Michael to be very sincere. Very, very interested in Michael because he's very sincere and he believes it. And when I met Timothy Good, Timothy believed it. Jim Mars, nobody believed. Nobody was more sincere than Jim. And those other men are very, very, very sincere. But Jim, rest in peace, incredibly sincere. And, you know, believed passionately in these the things we're talking about now. And I spoke to Jim about so many things over the years. Kennedy, of course. Money, of course. The trillion-dollar conspiracy. The Fed and all of that. But, of course, the alien agenda. Of course, Jim's book, Alien Agenda, remains the best-selling book about ufology that ever existed. And if you want to weigh into ufology, that book by Jim, Alien Agenda, is a very good way in. I miss Jim. You know, I was thinking about Jim the other day. I miss him. I used to have so many conversations with Jim, off-air conversations. Jim would see me on Skype. He would see that I was online and he'd give me a call out of the blue and we'd just chat about anything and everything. And I really miss him. The world misses Jim Mars. There's no doubt about that. Hi to William Henderson. Happy Easter, Richie. Happy Easter, William. Hi to These Are the Damned, to Gail. Again, a lot of interest in what Michael was saying, to Faisal as well. I always get asked, what do you believe, Richie? What do you believe? I don't know what I believe. No idea. I don't believe in the God I was, shall I be diplomatic and say, encouraged to believe in when I was younger. I don't buy into any of that. I rejected that a long time ago. Man was created by a benevolent creator in the sky who wants us all to run around like lunatics for his amusement. And at the end of all that, he will decide who gets to enter the kingdom of heaven. I find that to be monumental bollocks. And I know it offends some people when I say that, but I don't care that you're offended. You should grow up and not be offended by my finding it monumental bollocks. So is it atheism or is it agnosticism? It's got to be agnosticism. I don't know. I've no idea. I've come round to thinking that this is a holographic, it's a holographic construct. It's a hologram. That reality is not reality. I've come around to believing that. That it's decoded. Not just through the people who've come on the programme, but I've spent a lot of my own private time reading books and essays and all manner of paraphernalia from men and women from all over the world, some of it written 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago. That's where I am now. I do believe in this infinite energy, pure energy, can't be created, can't be destroyed, consciousness married to that, and everything else we're decoding. I do believe that now. No proof, of course. I can't prove it. but I believe it. I believe it's about the best explanation. So there's some manipulation going on somewhere. And that's where these entities come into it, these interdimensional things. And speaking with Rich Tyrrell from NASA was a real eye-opener for me. You know, people who followed some of the guests I've had on this program will say, ah, Rich Tyrrell, he's from NASA and he doesn't go far enough and he doesn't understand the full implications of it. That might very well be true. But I'm fascinated by mainstream people now talking about things that some of our guests have been talking about for years. And they're saying they can see the mathematics in it, in the construct. That's hugely interesting to me. It really is. The implications of that are absolutely profound, really, if it is true that we inhabit a hologram, a virtual universe that feels very real to us, looks very real, but isn't really. It's been designed to keep our consciousness trapped in some way, shape or form. That's what I kind of, if I had to take a punt on, if I had to bet the, I don't have a mortgage, I don't have a, what do I have? I don't have very much. If I had to bet my meagre possessions on one explanation being real, it would be the simulation theory. So there you go. I've said this before anyway, it's not new, but I've been asked by a couple of people on Twitter, what do you think, Richie? Well, I've just told you again. I don't know. Anyway, here's a bit of a news flash for you. I didn't do a programme last Easter Sunday, but I'm doing one this Easter Sunday. There will be a Sunday View on Easter Sunday. That's because I won't be with you on Monday because it's a bank holiday, and my long-term listeners will know I never work a bank holiday, never have done, and never will. So I'm off Monday, but I will be with you on Sunday morning for Sunday View. That's 11 a.m. UK time for an Easter Sunday Sunday View. I don't know what I'll be talking about. I've no idea. I'm not even sure if the major political programmes are on Sunday morning. I don't care. I'm not dependent on them. Whatever happens, I'll be with you on Sunday at 11 a.m. UK time for an Easter Sunday edition of Sunday View, looking over the Sunday newspapers. David tweets, it's not offensive. Monotheistic nonsense is as crass as it gets, says David. The idea that one creator made it all in the heavens. Never bought into it. Never believed it when I was younger. I did the, what you call the spontaneous things. The reflex things. Like in Ireland, you'd walk past a church or a chapel and you would instinctively bless yourself, cross yourself. I would do that instinctively. Even when I met the future Mrs. Allen, I think she said it to me once when we were in Manchester, the first time, back in 2004. And she said to me, did you just bless yourself there walking past that chapel? I said, I think I did. It was a reflex action. But I never believed it. I never bought into it. Take this. This is the body of Christ. Drink this, his blood. I mean, as a kid, I was like, no, don't swear. Got through a program without swearing. Don't do it. Don't do it. The program is now available to download at any time on iTunes. It's on Spotify.com as well. It is hosted at Podomatic.com. That's where we host the programme. Do download the Podomatic app. We're on the Truth Seeker app as well. I don't give that enough of a plug. Truth Seeker app is an app you can get from the App Store. And it's an app that contains hundreds and hundreds of programmes. InfoWars is on there. The Corbett Report is on there. Everything is on there. Mike Rivero, I think, might be on there. I'm on there. So it's kind of a one-stop shop for shed loads of independent TV and radio programmes, the Truth Seeker app from the App Store. If you want to get that, there it is. So I'm going to basically love you and leave you now. There was one final thing now. It's escaped. It's escaped me there. There was one final thing there. It was kind of important. I think it was about next week's programme. It'll come to me. At Of Argyle Cartoon Drunk tweets, there must be a God. What other explanation could there be to explain our complex universe, even if it's holographic? A God or a higher intelligence must have created it. It's a no-brainer, says Cartoon Drunk. I would argue with you and say it's not a no-brainer or anything like it. It is not. I wouldn't agree with that, my friend. Nothing is a no-brainer. I understand why you might think that, and you might be right. How do I know? What do I know? The older I get, the more I find out, the less I knew. Thanks to those of you who reminded me that it's the FSB now in Russia, not the KGB. That's quite right. It's the FSB and the poisoning and all of that. It should be very interesting the next 2 days. By the time we speak again on Easter Sunday morning, we might know more about what Yulia Skripal is saying now that she's awake and aware and alive and saying stuff, and thank God she is. It'll be interesting to see, does her father's condition improve now over the next 24 hours as well. We'll watch that closely. Look after yourselves and one another. My great friend Jean-Ann Crowley is going to be treading the boards soon, even if only for a very short time. She's been in Dublin rehearsing. Big break a leg, best wishes to the great actress and friend of mine, Jean-Ann Crowley. Thanks to Simon for looking after the new YouTube channel and uploading the interviews there. It's a thankless task at the moment, it is for Simon, but thanks to him for doing it. If you go to youtube.com/Richie Allen Show, you'll find our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Richie Allen Show. Have a very happy Easter, if that's your thing. Look after yourselves and one another. I'm going to leave you with Morrissey. This is very sage and this is very poignant. This is Hold On To Your Friends. Hold On To Your Friends. Take care. See you on Easter Sunday. Bye for now. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Michael Sala as well. Brilliant to hear from him.
Just hold on to you.